My topic for today is the American Reformation. This is kind of a politicized point of view about what is going to happen in the United States. Actually, it's been happening, and it is going to increase. And I see a coalescing, if you will, or a collision, actually, of a lot of different forces that are going to result in America being reformed. If we were to look at history, we'd recognize America's creation was energized by a set of fundamental human impulses, things that human beings aspired to or found to be valuable. One of them was the desire for freedom from tyranny, and the tyrannical authorities in those days in Europe and Asia were really kings and queens and dukes and earls and other elite that had risen in power or had collected power and influence, so they controlled other people's lives. Also, and primarily back in the day, it was the church. The Catholic Church was the dominant force, and so religions have been battling for a very long time. And Islam, the same thing is true, and you can see these crashing of forces, and it was always the smaller person, the less empowered person, the less powerful, less influential person that suffered at the hands of all of these powers. Basically, the kings and queens and others assumed the right, said, oh, this is God's will that we have this right. Even the kings and queens that just passed on this power, they called it divine right, because somebody had risen in power, claimed it, and the ignorant masses essentially went along and supported that, much to their detriment. So the idea that these people were, and church authorities as well, were claiming to have access to God's will and God's intention, and it was God's will and intention that they be in charge and other people do as they say. A lot of people didn't feel that to be true or didn't feel it served them. So the United States, or America, became a very popular place in those days to escape that tyranny. Connected to that impulse was the desire for religious freedom. There was tremendous suppression of other people's attempts at religious freedom, that is, to develop a personalized, individualized relationship with whatever they named that creative power. The church didn't allow that, so there was a lot of problems, and that's an understatement. There was a lot of destruction. There was a lot of bad stuff that went on trying to control that. So now you have an institutionalized, managed by others that were so harmful, so damaging, so destructive, that to escape that, people came to America. In a short period of time, this idea that America was the land of opportunity attracted still others, and this is going on even today. You know, there are studies now that kind of refute that idea in terms of economic and political mobility as being greater here than elsewhere. They have found that that's not really true. You can aspire and actually achieve more mobility in some other countries rather than the United States. But previously, we were considered the land of opportunity, and we tell ourselves that all the time. And so a lot of ambitious people who were dying from exploitation by the few. So many were dying from that exploitation, including my relatives in Europe and in Ireland. So continental Europe had that experience. Asia had that experience. Africa had that experience, although a lot of Africans got here, not because they were looking for opportunity, but because they had no choice. When you're chained in the bottom of a slave ship, it's not really a voluntary activity. But many people came here voluntarily because where they were was so terrible, nothing could be worse. And so they moved here. Being able to rise to whatever level of you, that your educational or your social or political inspiration and energy would allow you to do was really a tremendous promise. You could be and do and have whatever you were willing to work hard to achieve. So that is certainly in direct contrast to what was going on in Europe or Asia, where the social structures and political and economic caste systems were so rigid that if you were born as a certain thing, you were stuck in that same level. Couldn't really rise above it. You couldn't get out of it. Wasn't allowed. The systems were so inflexible, people above you would prevent you from rising out of your class, if you will. Now, we all know as we were growing up, we heard about the untouchables, that real low caste of people created in India. And if you were born into the untouchables, you basically had no choice but to stay there. Over time, that's been changing a little bit, but in other countries, something similar. While we poked our finger and, you know, thought how disgusting that was in India, variations of that existed elsewhere. It's a very common human consciousness characteristic to prevent people from getting what you want or attaining the same level that you want. Everybody wants to arrive first in the game of life if you're driven by ego consciousness, and you'll pretty much do anything you can to prevent other people from arriving ahead of you. And America offered a playing field where individually you could do a lot of different things, and people were not so committed to preventing you from doing that. This is early on. That may not be so true nowadays. So when people got to America, you know, this idea, the promise of America, the other freedoms became obvious to them, and it became really fundamental to the way we live as Americans. Freedom of speech has always been a very big and important idea. Freedom of assembly. Now, those two ideas, as normal as we think them, that were limitedly available in other countries. And even today, you can see that control of media and so on, that certain people are able to say certain things, but you really don't have the soapbox or the platform that other people do. Nonetheless, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom to bear arms, and the right to bear arms, and some other things have always been important to Americans and American life. The idea of the American Reformation, to me, is a process that's been going on for a long time. And if you were to think of kind of this image of an ocean wave, you know, an ocean wave seems to move, and we don't really think much of it. It's like it's a wave. It moves. Waves move. Energy is being communicated from one water molecule to the next water molecule to the next water molecule. And you can see these huge activities we call waves, and certainly most of us are familiar now when those waves are gigantic and potentially damaging because land is in the way, tsunamis, then it's like, wow, now I got to pay attention to waves. But people that travel on boats or live near water certainly have an appreciation for the power of waves. What's going on now in the American Reformation is the idea that communications technologies give each molecule, a human being if you will, each one of us, a cell in the body of humanity or cell in the body of God, gives us the opportunity to transmit energy from us to others. In the old days, if you could imagine this back in the day, and even in our lifetimes, for some of us, we recognize this idea of somebody talking over the back fence. My mother used to talk to the next door neighbor over the fence, so they'd stand outside the fence, and my neighbor was a pretty significant gossip. So she would gossip, and that's how information got exchanged. Today in America, and actually the world, there are communications technologies that allow information energy, to be passed from person to person. And frankly, with social media, the internet, and email, and so on, the energies can now be distributed one to many. So one person, instead of talking over the back fence to one person, is in fact capable of talking to people all over the world. And these technologies are absolutely amazing for communicating information. The other night, I was talking to a woman in Australia, and she was looking for a couple of PDFs in order to fill out some forms. So as we were talking, she gave me an email address. I sent two PDFs in an email, and within 4 seconds, 5 seconds, she had the email with the PDFs. From here to Australia in about 5 seconds. Astonishing. Astonishing way to transmit information. So now this idea that freedom of speech, freedom of expression, gives us opportunities in America, in the world, to communicate with one another like never before. It's amazing. It's amazing. What would really benefit America during the American Reformation, and frankly would make it less painful and harmful and damaging, because those that resist it is like trying to resist a wave that's going to hit you. It is going to hit. I think that's inevitable. It's this idea that we can learn to know and appreciate the law of cause and effect. It's inviolate. It is going to happen every time, all the time. We are going to reap what we sow. And if everybody really understood that and really appreciated that, we would be paying attention to what we're sowing. We would know that it's literally, if we're going to turn around and spew hatred and other things, that's going to come back to us. So the only variables regarding the law of cause and effect, that is, we reap what we sow, is how long it takes for the harvest to arrive. And you know, from when we plant the seed till the time we harvest is dependent on whatever circumstance we're dealing with. Planting of the seed, a male seed in a female body, is really a 9-month, 39-week or so process before the harvest, before we see the fruit of that. And plants and other things take different levels. But when we're planting vibrational seeds, we're not certain of exactly when that harvest is going to occur. We're not actually certain of how it's going to be delivered to us or in what form. The only thing we do know, and we need to know, is it is going to be delivered to us. The harvest will arrive at our doorstep. In America, we don't tend to think like that. We tend to idealize us as the most wonderful country, the freest country, the land of the free, the home of the brave. We're the good guys, we have the white hat on, and so on. And that if anything bad happens to us, wasn't our fault. We were not participants, we were just innocent people, and then we have to retaliate. That is not actually how it works. If Americans were to just consider for a moment that 9/11 was really an effect, that is, a reaping of some previously sown seeds that we're responsible for, then all of a sudden they would ask questions, hey, what is it we have sown that would have provided a harvest that we label the 9/11 event? What seeds of destruction, what seeds of disempowerment, what seeds of hatred have we sown, and who in America would have sown those so they came back to us? But instead of that happening, the forces of imbalance, those people who really have figured out ways to, on a material level, benefit from keeping the economic or political or the opportunity playing fields so tilted in their favor, they have been able to market the image of 9/11 being the cause of our attack on the Taliban in Afghanistan, and the attacks of us doing various things. So we see that event as a cause rather than an effect, and I think that is a clear distortion of reality. One of the great challenges when you're talking about subjects like the American Reformation or pretty much any kind of topic that may be emotionally or politically or energetically charged is to be able to keep offering high vibration energy to what you want to create rather than what you're opposed to. What you want to bond with, connect to, build, rather than what you reject or try to push away or try to destroy. And all these conversations tend to go in that direction. I am a fan of a Dominican Italian priest, Girolamo Savonarola. Savonarola was born about, I think, 1452 and died in 1498 after being tortured and executed by hanging and burning at the stake. But as a reformer, he started out with great intentions to increase morality and the eliminate or to build a more moral society. But it shifted from creating that sort of society to anger at those that were corrupt or immoral. And that anger, you reap what you sow, is really what got him executed as a heretic. And so these powers retaliated with anger and hatred, and because they were the powerful, they had access to, you know, terrible ways of delivering pain to people, and they were able to control and sway public opinion. So this idea of being against something is a normal human behavior. We bond with things that we want, and we reject things that we don't want. The American Reformation is going to be representative of those two impulses, and we're going to be breaking up a lot of different things in this time, as well as trying to build things, put things back together in a different form, as in reform America. That's going to be happening. And so it seems really easy to me to, or certainly easier to think when you look at injustice and things of that sort, to become angry. That's true in America, but it's probably even true in many other countries when you hear about what's going on, the political suppression and horrors of the man's inhumanity to man. You either become angry or you become depressed in its hopelessness. But when you really turn around and look at what's going on in America, you can see there are a whole lot of people that make a lot of money by spewing hate, talking hatred, talking heads, political talking heads on TV and radio, for instance. They make millions of dollars inciting anger, and they're pointing at these people as the enemy, and those people as the enemy, and this process as the enemy, that political party as the enemy, and it goes, that religion as the enemy, on and on. That is increasing the amount of rejection in the average American's life. And that rejection shows up not only in the disharmony within families and within communities and work environments, but it shows up as disharmony within each person's individual body and life. And so the increase in illness is literally being the seeds of that, the seeds of an individual's destruction are being planted by these talking heads spewing hatred, and people are ingesting that energy as if there's nothing wrong with it, as if it's correct. So I look at these people and I notice that they deliver this stuff with a nonchalance that they don't really care what it is they're doing. They're spewing poison, but they think nothing of it. They are poisoning people. That sends them to either their immediate deaths by pointing out some enemy, which they then react to, or they slowly die of the toxicity of these attitudes, these consciousness forms that are penetrating them like viruses. I think if you question somebody like that, one of these hate-mongering personalities on TV, you probably would get, hey, I'm just following the ratings. And they would say that, and really when you think of that, I'm just following the ratings. It's like excuse making. It's an alibi that's just kind of a horrible variation on this one that we've heard. And this one is the infamous one. I was just following orders. human beings have done things, and they played that song back, you know, the Adolf Eichmanns and others. I was just following orders. Like, okay. The challenge for each of us in this reformation is to offer not low vibrations, even though that's the human consciousness part of us, the ego part of us, is screaming for us to do that, is we need to recognize that that's going to be a tendency and make a choice to rise higher than that, to a higher emotional state. And as long as we understand that the pull of those lower emotional states are formidable, then it's like when they start tugging, we go, I'm already aware of this, and we can rise above them. That'll be the challenge for us during this reformation, because there's going to be a lot of destruction, a lot of displacement that goes on, and as it already is with the economic situation in America, you know, foreclosures and the greed and stuff that's been shown by banks and Wall Street and others, and the military-industrial complex that wants another war, and everybody's screaming, well, not everybody, some insane people are screaming about, let's go to war, let's attack Iran. As if nobody is noticing, we just did two preemptive attacks, and we've destroyed many things, many people, many women, men, children, all kinds of structures in the societies that we've attacked, and we've destroyed our own people, and we've destroyed our own economy. So I don't know how much more destruction people need before they recognize that attacking is, while it may be profitable for a few, is really terrible for the many. And if we got that, if we got that idea that, wait a minute, this sowing of hatred is going to produce a harvest to us as individuals, if we in fact sow that way, or if we choose higher vibration sowing, then we're going to have different experiences while other people around us have the harvest that they've earned, if you will, that they've magnetized to them through their sowing of hatred and discrimination and racism and so on. The law of cause and effect, if this is true, and I certainly believe it's true, is clearly no respecter of popes or presidents or paupers. We're going to reap what we sow. And if we understand that we're sowing with our thoughts, our feelings, our words, and our actions, that should be a pretty good wake-up call to us that says we've got to choose the harvest that we want and then choose the appropriate seed thoughts that are going to grow into that harvest. I think that we can know and work on these concepts in this lifetime because we have communication, we have a higher level of education, we have time because we're not faced, as our ancestors were, with trying to survive from day to day. Our lives are so much better, certainly in our culture, than our parents or grandparents or great-grandparents. We're not in day-to-day survival for the most part. We have time to focus on these higher values, and if we don't, we're going to be experiencing not good things in our own lives and in the lives of our families. Everybody can look at the American system right now, and pretty much everybody would go, yep. There needs to be a reformation of the economic / political systems. They have to be reformed because they're not working for the majority. They're not working for the people. They're working for a few, but they're not working for the people as a group. And this is what needs to change. We need to reform. So now, what does that mean? Pretty much everybody says, yeah, it needs to reform, but it needs to be the other guy who does the reforming. That person, that group, those people need to change, not me. Well, if we think the problem is the other person, there's not really much opportunity for reformation in a smooth, peaceful, nonviolent way. If we recognize that, wait a minute, I'm a participant here. I also need to reform. As an individual, I am part of the whole, and I just can't expect the whole to change while I remain the same. Not going to happen. And if we accept that we're an important part of the problem, different things now can happen. It's real easy as a human being to not look at certain things. We go toward pleasure and we don't look at difficulty, or we'll avoid difficulty like it's a saber-toothed tiger. But if you would do some thinking, if we do some consideration, if we do some noodling about situations, pretty soon it becomes clear to us that the deck is stacked, the playing field is tilted, the game is rigged. We all know those kind of expressions. And we go, yeah, American life is like that. The deck is stacked, the playing field is tilted, and the game is rigged. Not for our advantage, but for the advantage of the few over the many. So what do we do? What do we do? We wake up to that. And we recognize that in order to come into balance, in order to make life different, we've got to start thinking about somebody other than just ourselves. Yep, we're human. We want what we want, and we want it when we want it. Yep, no problem with that. That's human consciousness. But we don't have to act like humans any more than we have to act like cavemen. We can, or thugs, we can actually make a decision that, wait a minute, if we can do something to improve the lives of more people, if we can help more people make their lives good and effective, that actually benefits everybody. This common misunderstanding, and frankly, I don't understand it, how a person could think that I can be rich and happy and successful and healthy, and it doesn't make any difference to me about my neighbors. Any more than a single cell in the body could go, as long as I'm healthy, I don't really care about the rest of the body. I don't care about the rest of the cells. I don't care about the rest of the tissues. I don't care about the rest of the organ. I don't care about the health of the whole, the body. We would say, wow, that'd be a terrible situation to be in. But that's what we do. That's what we do as human beings. We think only of ourselves and not those that we're connected to. And you go, gee, I'm a Christian. And what did Christ do? Christ connected to everybody who is open to being connected to. And that was not really the power structure. Those folks, for the most part, were challenged by him to think differently and to recognize that the name of the game is balancing the playing field, helping other people, being more charitable, being fairer, reinterpreting God from this scary creature, this Superman being that was looking to punish certain people and protect others, to do away with that sort of nonsense. So he would treat other people as equals, even the people that were shunned by the average person, lepers and beggars and tax people and so on. He would extend himself and connect to them. We say we're Christians, but we don't do that. We shun those people just like the Pharisees would have done. We push everybody apart that doesn't align with our sensibilities. We act as unchristlike as imaginable. It's not going to serve us, because when we act like that, we are sowing seeds, and we're going to experience the pain of that in the American Reformation. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is a pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we're sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care, and our country and its people into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.